Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Next Sunday, you're invited to a front seat at radio's most exciting dramatic event. The Theater Guild on the Air, full hour and a half presentation of Shakespeare's immortal masterpiece, Hamlet. Celebrated actor John Gielgud will appear in the complex and difficult title role. Pamela Brown portrays the Queen, and Dorothy McGuire plays Ophelia. All the intrigue, beauty, and romance of the pages of Hamlet come to life next Sunday on Theater Guild on the Air.
From Hollywood, from the desk by the window looking right down on Hollywood and Vine, NBC brings you Hedda Hopper. With tonight's news brought to life by Dorothy Shea, David Niven, Rosalind Russell. And here she is, Hedda Hopper.
Hello, everybody. The big excitement in Hollywood today is that there are 10 subpoenas on their way from Washington to Hollywood personalities to testify before the Un-American Activities Committee. Only name reported to be on the list so far is Larry Parks. Eddie Robinson has one of the finest art collections in America and declares that he will sell every painting if necessary to clear himself of any communistic taint. I asked Kirk Douglas when he and Irene Reitzman would marry. Since he was a free man on Friday, he said the date will have to come from Irene, since we haven't discussed either time or place. A preview of Look Award.
Wait a minute, Miss Hopper.
Huh? What's the matter, Patsy?
Well, I'm sorry to interrupt your column, but there's a man here who said it wouldn't make any difference.
He what?
No, no, interrupt Hedda any place. I said it makes no difference at all.
David Niven.
Well, hello, darling. Do you mind if I sit down?
No, I mean, yes. I mean, what do you mean it makes no difference?
Well, interrupting that news of yours, that peep story of Hollywood, that startling saga of cinematic sightseeing, that stuff.
David, I thought you liked my column.
Well, it's all right, I suppose. As far as it goes, bumps around a bit.
Now, look here, Lord Chumley. What kind of a taffy pull is this? What makes you say things like that?
Oh, relax, Hedda, relax. I love you. But there is a spot here in your column where a chap can sound his trumpet. You know, blow his top, make a fool of himself, that sort of thing.
Oh, so that's it. You've got a complaint. You want to argue. What about?
Well, the thing I'm talking about, your column itself, your news.
Oh?
Oh, seriously, Hedda, the other night I was struggling with a bottle of olives for a martini when I was struck by the most stupendous idea. People who write Hollywood news are all bottlenecked. Old Hedda's missing the boat, I said to myself. She's not charging on, being backward about striding forward.
What on earth are you talking about?
News. You only write half of it.
Huh?
You only tell what happens. But, Hedda, look what you're missing. Half the stories. News of the things that don't happen.
How many martinis?
Oh, don't let's talk shop. I mean this, Hedda. Think of the possibilities to report the stories that never take place.
Well, I've been accused of that once or twice. I suppose you gather that kind of news by not being present where something doesn't happen.
You pulling my leg now?
Am I? Well, David Niven, I'm going to beat you over the head with it if you don't stop this nonsense.
Nonsense?
Tell me what...
Hedda, now listen to me. I can prove to you that some of the most world-shaking things that have happened in our town have developed out of something that didn't happen. Or to make it simpler, horrible social changes have not occurred because of something that didn't happen.
Oh, good heavens. Here we go again.
Now, be patient. I'm going to give you the greatest story you've ever had.
Go on.
Right. Now, Hedda, in 1934, a decision was made by a producer here in Hollywood. A most important, far-reaching decision when it comes to our present-day mode of life, our Anglo-American relations, the psychology of our children, the happiness of our homes.
David, hurry up. Give me the story.
All right. Here you are, Hedda. It's all yours.
In 1934, producer Harry Sherman looked at a handsome, 6-foot young man and at the smiling agent beside him and at the contract on his desk and uttered these momentous words.
No, I changed my mind.
What? David, is that all? Is that the...
Go on, read the rest.
The producer then turned to his secretary and said...
Get me Bill Boyd.
What?
I guess I'll give Bill that part instead. That part of what's-his-name, Hopalong something.
David, no.
Hedda, yes, that's true.
You mean that you were the one that... Oh, David, I certainly will buy your news. Think of it. What might have been. Well, here goes. In 1934, in Hollywood, a certain producer said...
No, I changed my mind. No, I didn't either. David Niven, you've got the part. You're Hopalong Cassidy.
It might have been marches on. This year in 1951, the man of the year, the people's hero, is none other than the king of the cowboys, Hopalong Cassidy.
All right, you rustler fellows, I've got you all nicely covered up. Reach. Reach. Come on, I said reach, you chaps.
It might have been takes you now to visit a typical American home.
I won't. Hoppy doesn't have to eat cereal. I want my tea and kippers.
And in 1951, in the great western states of America, where men are men and music is still music...
Oh, give me a helm where the buffalo roam, where the deer and the antelope...
Our scene now moves to Washington, D.C., where in the halls of Congress...
And so I say to you, gentlemen, I have promised my constituents I would put this question on record. If we make this loan to the British Empire, will we be paid back again in those gosh-brave hop-along suits with the jodhpurs and Eton collars?
Yes, in 1951, Britannia rules the plains. And why? Because on a million television screens throughout our nation, Hoppy rides again. And again. And again. And again.
Well, there you are. You see, I told you chaps to reach. Now, come along. Come along, you posse people. Now, pop on your ponies and follow me. Press on, men.
Yes, all America is breathless as on the television screen. The villain alone is still fugitive. The villain alone against Hoppy.
You'll never get me, Cassidy, you dreadful bounder. Now move along before I touch you up a bit with the old 45.
Yes, Hoppy's in danger, but one of his faithful sidekicks, the grizzled mule skinner Zeke, warns him in time.
Oh, blimey, Governor, there's a blooming great rattlesnake right beyond that little hummock. I told you once, I told you 1,000 times. Reach, you chaps.
Thank you for saving our aunt, Mr. Hopalong. That mortgage was getting to be quite a bother. The pater and I are most grateful. Really.
And as Hoppy says goodbye to the girl and jumps gracefully onto his faithful horse, Top Hats, and goes riding out into the sunset...
Stop it! Stop it, Tedder! Stop it! Stop
it! Yes, David?
Well, maybe it's all right for Bill Boyd to leave the girl and kiss the horse. But if I'd ever got that part, I assure you Hopalong Niven wouldn't waste any sunset.
Why, Hoppy! Hoppy!
Reach, baby, reach.
Hoppy.
Oh, I say, yahoo.
Believe it or not, it's true. The thing that didn't happen did happen. When he first came to Hollywood, an agent actually took David Niven around to try out for the part of Hopalong Cassidy. And if he had gotten it, he might have changed the face of the whole television. Claire Booth Luce arrives the end of this week. She'll deliver 3 lectures, one for the Santa Ana Women's Club. They're paying her $1,500, which flattens their bankroll. And they asked me if I'd come down and introduce her for free. I informed them I also like money. Robert Taylor asked Barbara Stanwyck for his freedom. He got it. Now he doesn't know what to do with it, but I'm sure his little Italian girlfriend could tell him. Anne Southern was offered the Ethel Merman role in the Chicago company of Call Me Madam by Leland Haywood. George Saunders begged out of the Pinsa part in South Pacific because of a back injury. In Jerry Wall's first picture for RKO, Behave Yourself, with Shelley Winters and Farley Granger, they have a new gimmick, a dog as a dope peddler. Korean war wounded sometimes get home faster than the news. Mark Stevens was at Travis Air Base last week and stopped to talk to a wounded Marine who said, I left your brother-in-law in Korea. He was clubbed over the head with a rifle, left for dead on the field 2 days, but said if I saw you to tell you he's in the hospital and getting along fine. And that was the first notice his family had of his injury. Jose Ferrer was offered $100,000 and 5% of the profits to appear in the picture of George Bernard Shaw, Andrew Cleese, and the Lion. But he's the producer and also co-stars with Gloria Swanson in the Broadway hit 20th Century. And if he steps out, he could be in plenty of trouble with Actors Equity. Day after Hope Emerson appeared in our radio show, director Alan Dwan telephoned to ask if she'd play an army nurse in a picture for him and repeat the song she did on our show. Nothing makes a columnist happier than to have a prediction come true. In 1941, I wrote this item. Do yourself a favor and go down to the House of Murphy to hear a new singer. This girl from Jacksonville, Florida, has a repertoire as sensational as her chassis. The movies haven't grabbed her yet, but mark me words, they will. The name of that girl was Dottie Sims. Yes, she's in the movies now. What's the matter? Don't you recognize the name? Well, you'll recognize the voice.
Summertime, and the living is easy. Fish are jumping, and the carbon is high. Oh, your dad is rich, and your ma is good looking. So hush, little baby, don't you cry.
Thanks, Dorothy, but I'm still not sure our listeners know who you are. Go on, give us some more clues.
Well, clue number two. I just finished making my first movie, The Real McCoy, with Abbott and Costello.
Clue number three. You've been killing them in nightclubs for years, and your next stop, the Persian Room in New York's Plaza Hotel.
Well, clue number four. After that boost of yours gave me a little self-confidence, Hedda, I changed my name and changed my whole style of singing.
Yes, from Dottie Sims to Dorothy Shay. Go on, Dottie, sing like the Park Avenue hillbilly.
On the outskirts of our town lived a gal named Sadie Brown. They say she's making money by the peck. For the simple country maid landed on the hit parade in a manner that we never did expect. Unlike any of her kin, she grew whiskers on her chin, and her sideburns caused the neighbors to remark. Through no effort of her own, soon her beard became full grown. Now they've got her own display in Central Park. They call her Sagebrush Sadie, the famous bearded lady. Her whiskers brought her riches and renown. They're the pride of the museum, and it costs 2 bits to see them, and the family's getting rich on Sadie Brown. All the neighbors thereabouts have tried their best to figure out why she grew a set of whiskers, but they can't. Both her sisters look like Ma, and the boys resemble Pa, but Sadie seems to favor General Grant. She started running round with a barber in the town, and the fellow seemed to have an awful crush. But it's easy to explain why she drove the man insane, for Sadie had the skin you love to brush. Her barber friend proposed, just as everyone supposed, but the way he did it made her kind of vex. He'd been married twice before, and the thing that made her sore was when he rode up to her gate and hollered next. She consented with a smile, and he led her down the aisle in the chapel where the morning glories bloom. But poor old Parson Trout couldn't get it figured out, so he shook hands with the bride and kissed the groom. They call her Sagebrush Sadie, famous bearded lady. She's happy that she's wed and settled down. For her little baby daughter has a mustache like an otter. She's the image of her mother, Sadie Brown.
Thank you. Second prediction about Dorothy Shay, now that she's in the movies, Gangway, here comes the new star. The Duke and Duchess of Windsor's friends are holding their breath, hoping they won't hit the headlines in the hottest story of the year. Catherine Grayson goes into court for her divorce as soon as a property settlement with Johnny Johnson is agreed upon. If Betty Davis wins the Oscar, she won't be here to receive it. She and Gary Merrill save for England March the 14th to co-star in a picture called One Man's Poison. She plays a murderess, he a cad. And they fell in love while playing love scenes in All About Eve. Well, I got my marching orders to report to Fort MacArthur Monday night. Not from Uncle Sam, but from Universal International for a preview of Bill Mauldin's Upfront starring David Wayne and Tom Ewell. In Egypt, where women are demanding equal rights, 500 women attacked the police. They want a change in the divorce laws. Today, a Muslim can divorce his wife anytime he feels like it. All he has to say is, I divorced thee three times and he's free. Reno can't match that speed. Merrill Muller of NBC reports that General Ike Eisenhower says he'll definitely run for the presidency if he's drafted by a major political party. Says General Ike told him himself and said that President Truman will back him for the presidency if he agrees to run on the Democratic ticket. Here in California, the daffodils are blooming. Even in the coldest parts of the country, spring is just around the corner. Yes, it's the time when the fancy of even a slightly mature columnist lightly turns to thoughts of love. And I have one particular thought, a memory. And it's the ideal time to recall it. It concerns Rosalind Russell and one of the lightest thoughts of love ever turned.
You mean turned for a well-placed kick-hitter in a well-kicked place.
Well, that's what happens in all your comedies, Roz, including your next one for independent artist, Teach Me to Love. You and romance always get together the hard way.
Rosalind Russell, Girl Gawk. Oh, yes, yes, I know the one you're thinking of, Hedda. George Beck's Hired Wife, the one I did for Universal International.
Yes, Hired Wife, and it's quite a story how you got hired.
Well, with a little help from some spring music, I think you and I can explain how such a thing can happen, even to Russell.
Here we go. Roz is Kendall Browning, employed in New York by Stephen Dexter of the Stephen Dexter Cement Company. A man who saw only her horn-rimmed glasses and poised pencil, but never her trim figure. Every spring, poor Kendall had to watch Stephen go off on a romantic toot and come home with his heart in a sling. So on April, when Stephen had fallen into the clutches of a man-eating blonde named Phyllis Walden, Kendall decided to take matters into her own hands.
Oh, Kendall.
Yes, Mr. Dexter?
Phyllis Walden, the model, will be dropping in to discuss an advertising contract.
Oh, yes, Mr. Dexter.
Well, anything wrong with that?
You want the truth or an argument?
What we need in our advertising is to humanize Dexter Cement.
Soften it up.
Yes, we must make our cement stand out. Give it a personality.
Perfume it.
So we're going to use a girl, that's all. She'll be our trademark.
Lil Phyllis Cement.
Now, that's enough, Kendall. Be sure in the moment she arrives.
Yeah, very well, Mr. Dexter. Phyllis Walden. This cement bag of 1951. I didn't mind to toss her out on her shell pink. Yes?
Phyllis Walden is here to see Mr. Dexter.
Well, tell her to Mr. Dexter. We'll see her right away. Oh, no. No, send her in here to me. I'm probably going to hate myself for this in the morning.
You're Stephen's secretary?
Yes, I'm Kendall Browning, Stephen's private secretary.
I'm Phyllis Walden.
Miss Walden, I've got some bad news for you.
Oh?
Mr. Dexter was going to put you on his cement bag.
What?
Oh, as a model, I mean, for advertising.
Go on.
Well, the deal is off. Mr. Dexter changed his mind just before he left for Chicago.
Chicago? Well, what did he say?
Well, if you really want to know, he said, tell Miss Goofy Pan she can't peddle or kiss her to Steve Dexter.
What?
Uh-huh, that's what he said.
Kendall, this is Miss Walden. Oh. Why, Phyllis, darling, come on in.
Stephen. My, but that was a fast trip to Chicago.
Chicago? What are you talking about?
No, don't get excited, Stephen. When you finish with Miss Paroxa, Miss Walden, I'll explain.
Kendall, I still can't understand what made you say those things to Phyllis Walden. She was so upset I had to take her home.
Phooey.
What?
I said phooey.
Well, now that's a fine attitude.
Well, it's for your own good. Every springtime, your young man's fancy lightly turns to thoughts of man traps. 2 years ago, it was that Hoboken redhead. Last year was the...
Never mind. Phyllis is a lady.
Huh. So is Lassie.
Kendall, you're my right hand. I can't run this business without you.
But stay out of my private life!
Oh, all right. All right, I'm tired of doubling as a nurse for a delinquent anyway.
Kiddies. End of round one.
Oh, come on in, Roger.
Either of you need a good lawyer?
Oh, my secretary here objects to a young lady of my acquaintance.
The great love of his life. He saw her picture in an advertisement on a new model automobile and went all gooey.
Yes, I did.
He was fascinated by the automatic rumble seat.
Now, look, kiddies, if you really want to fight, save it for the board meeting of the General Cement Company.
Oh, Stephen, we're due there in half an hour.
Cutthroats are sore at you, boy. They'll pull every legal trick in the book to get you out of business.
Get your notebook, Kendall.
Right.
Come on, Raj, and sharpen that keen legal mind. We're going to need it.
Dexter, we offered to buy your company at a fair price.
The price wasn't fair, Mr. Hudson, and you know it.
We gave you a chance to come in with us, but you chose to fight.
That's right, Latimer. And I'll keep right on fighting.
But not for very long. We're bringing an injunction against you first thing in the morning. Dexter, we'll tie up every penny you owe.
That's a technicality, a trick.
It's unfair.
Of course it's unfair. But it's legal and there's nothing you can do. Right, Hudson?
Right.
Oh, Stephen.
Take a good look at the office. The Stephen Dexter Cement Company is on the way out.
We better take home a few sacks. I hear they make good tents.
Oh, very fine.
Please, Roger, isn't there something we can do?
No, they'll tie up every cent in your name. It's too bad you aren't married. Hey, that's it, Stephen. You've got to get married.
What?
Is it him? You mean him? Get married?
Sure. Now I'll put every last penny, every sack of cement, even your house, in your wife's name.
Well, there must be some other way.
No, it'll just be a formality. After a few weeks, you can get a divorce.
Stephen, it's a wonderful idea. All you have to do is find a girl you can trust. Someone who understands your problem. Someone close to you.
Kendall, you're right. And you know who she is.
Oh, Stephen.
Now, come on. You'll have to be married tonight, and you can't do that in New York, so you'll have to fly to Charleston.
Well, I've got to go home and change my clothes.
Why?
For the trip.
Well, why do you have to go?
Stephen. Whom are you going to marry?
Well, who do you think? Phyllis Walden. Now, come on, let's get busy. Oh. I'll make a list of all my property. Roger, draw up papers transferring everything to my wife.
Well,
Miss Howard, get 2 reservations on the next plane for Charleston. Oh, and Kendall, go ask Phyllis Walden to marry me.
What?
Well, I'd ask her myself, but I just haven't got the time.
Well, what do you want me to do? Drag her here by the hair of her phony eyelashes?
Please, Kendall, I need your help.
You don't need me. You need Dorothy Dix.
Oh, look, you'll know how to talk to another woman, Kendall. You can explain.
Sure. I can explain. Help! Oh, it's you. Hello, Walden. What's new in the woodwork? Goodbye. Now, wait a minute. Mr. Dexter sent me.
Well, come on in. I'm just dying to hear what you have to say. Your lies are so corny, they're fascinating.
This one will knock you out. Mr. Dexter wants you to marry him tonight.
He does. Uh-huh. Well, I hardly know what to say.
Well, you might say a simple yes or no. Look, Walden, I'm not batting for Cupid. This is strictly business.
Whose business?
Yours. This can put you within spending distance of some very serious sugar.
Go on, I'm listening.
Well, Stephen will be waiting for you at the airport at 5:00.
Flying to Chicago again, I suppose?
Uh-uh, Charleston.
How nice. I've never been married in Charleston.
No?
You must think I'm an awful dope. Really, Brian?
Well, now, I'm just telling you what...
Sure. Wouldn't it be nice for you to go back to Stephen and say, that Walden number is a price tag. But me, Kendall, I'm not that kind of a girl.
Stephen just told me to ask you.
Well, tell him I'd love to marry him tonight. But my trousseau's in the laundry.
All washed up, huh? Well, little Kendall has done her duty. I'll tell him, Walden.
Brother, will I tell him.
Roger.
Roger, our plane leaves in 5 minutes. I wonder what's keeping Phyllis.
Will you stop having pups? You know you can count on Kendall.
Steve! Oh, Steve!
Oh, there's Kendall. But Phyllis isn't with her.
Steve, Phyllis said no.
You mean she won't marry me?
Now, you mustn't blame her. No woman wants to get married just for a favor.
Well, it was a nice business while I had it.
You haven't lost it, Steve. All you have to do is marry somebody.
Oh, sure, sure. But who?
Well, don't look at me. I can't cook.
Look, Steve, you've got to get married tonight. It doesn't matter who, as long as she's a girl you can trust.
Steve! Steve, look at her! Don't you know a wife when you see one?
Kendall? Yeah. Oh, maybe she's busy tonight.
Well, really, I had planned to read another chapter of Little Women.
Southbound Flight 6 now departing, Gate 5. Mr. Dexter, please check
okay.
The flight steward.
Okay, Kendall, what do you say? Marry me until this trouble blows over?
Oh, darling, your troubles have just begun. Come on, husband, let's go. And that's how I became a hired wife. But you know, it didn't turn out to be a bad job at all, if you like that sort of work. I do. Because in the springtime, one thing always seems to lead to another. It did. Now my face is on the sack of a cement. Stephen? Oh, I've got him in a bag.
Thank you. Thank you for all of us. Tonight, in the minds of every thinking America, lurks the thought of danger to our country. We pray for inspired leadership needed to beat back the commie threat. I found much comfort and reassurance in the following words, which I'd like you to share with me. Next to the approbation of my own mind, the approbation of my fellow citizens is dear to my heart. In a free country, such approbation should be a citizen's reward. But the reverse is often the case. He who wishes to serve his country, if not influenced by high motives, runs the risk of being miserably disappointed. Under such discouragements, the good citizens will look beyond the applause and reproach of men. He will stand firm in conscious rectitude and the hope of approving heaven. Yes, those were the words of our president, our first president, the father of our country, the America you and I love and cherish, the America our sons and husbands are again fighting and many of them dying for. Tonight, let's pray for a rebirth in today's leadership of the great spirit of Washington. The spirit that puts country above self-interest, that puts duty ahead of just pleasing people. Let's keep our faith in the same divine source from which Washington drew his help. Then America will again be blessed with the consecrated leadership which has and will again protect and preserve our God-given heritage of freedom.
Next week, NBC will again bring you Hedda Hopper with Hollywood news brought to life by Roy Rogers, Dale Evans, and Claudette Colbert.
Good night, everybody.
Hear Hedda Hopper next Sunday, right after Phil Harris. And in just a moment, hear Theater Guild with Spencer Tracy, Joan Bennett, and Elizabeth Taylor, starring in Father of the Bride. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Next on NBC, Theater Guild on the Air presents a one-hour adaptation of the delightful comedy Father of the Bride. For a drama from the modern-day Wild West, this evening hear Joel McRae in Tales of the Texas Rangers. Theater Guild presents Father of the Bride next on NBC.